Greetings and welcome to the 10th podcast in the Energy Links podcast series. I'm your host, Paul Rippey, and I'm here by Skype with Jay Thompson. Jay is a poet, a part-time essayist, and a blogger who writes about literature for the Kenyon Review's website. Jay Thompson, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here, Paul.
Jay, where are you now?
I'm in Gambier, Ohio. I'm working at Kenyon College's summer camp for young creative writers.
Well, this is sort of a special podcast. We're going to look briefly at a poem which Jay has steered me to and which I like a lot. We've talked in the past on this podcast series about the advantages of decentralizing energy for poor people and keeping the scale and the location of energy generation appropriate for people who are living in villages. So we're going to be looking at a poem that shows the other side of the coin when energy is generated with a scale and in a location so that local people have no control over it. And it's a poem that might cause some of us, professionals who are working in international development, to reflect at least a bit on our work. Jay, could you tell us a thing or two about the poem, who wrote it, and what it is?
The poem is by Robert Haas, and the poem's called Ezra Pound's Proposition, and it's taken from Haas's collection of poems, Time and Materials. Haas is not a particularly prolific poet. He's only put out 5 books in 30 years, but he's definitely one of our best living poets. And Time and Materials, this book, which came out last year, won him both the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award, which is a big deal. It's the sort of double crown of literature. Haas is also something of an activist poet. He was the poet laureate of the U.S. from 1995 to 1997, and in his tenure, he was responsible for bringing poetry into classrooms and public spaces, promoting literacy and environmental and arts education. The poem Ezra Pound's Proposition is set in Thailand. Haas has traveled a lot in his capacity as sort of an international writer and has been involved in refugee issues, freeing imprisoned writers in other countries. Haas begins this poem with an idea that's taken from Ezra Pound, who was a gifted early 20th century poet and also famously a far, far right-wing economic theorist who, during World War II, fled to Italy and sided with the fascists. And after the war, he only escaped execution for treason by a plea of insanity. So Haas begins with this idea of Ezra Pound and then follows it in a very surprising way with a scene outside a Bangkok hotel.
So would you read the poem to us?
Sure, my pleasure. Ezra Pound's Proposition. Beauty is sexual, and sexuality is the fertility of the earth, and the fertility of the earth is economics. Though he is no recommendation for poets on the subject of finance, I thought of him in the thick heat of the Bangkok night. Not more than 14, she saunters up to you outside the Shangri-La Hotel and says in plausible English, "How about a party, big guy?" Here is more or less how it works. The World Bank arranges the credit, and the dam floods 300 villages, and the villagers find their way to the city, where their daughters melt into the teeming streets, and the dam's great turbines, beautifully tooled in Lund or Dresden or Detroit, financed by Lazare Frères in Paris or the Morgan Bank in New York, enabled by judicious gifts from Bechtel of San Francisco or Halliburton of Houston to the local political elite, spun by the force of rushing water, have become hives of shimmering silver. And downriver, they throw that bluish throb of light across her cheekbones and her lovely skin.
Thank you. So Robert Haas is essentially, I'm not doing justice to the point, but is essentially criticizing big energy and the indirect impact that can have on poor villages. You know, when I hear this, I'm reminded of what Gaurav Gupta said on an earlier podcast. He said that he preferred decentralized energy because at least it decentralized the opportunities for corruption. And that's what I see happening at this point. When decisions are made too far upstream, no pun intended, the interests of the people downstream are likely to be ignored. But Jay, one of the things I don't get in the poem completely is the reference to Ezra Pound. I mean, what is he doing in there? Wouldn't the poem have made just as much sense without him?
Well, it's Pound's idea that connects, to my reading at least, global finance to this flicker of desire that the speaker of the poem may, despite his shame, despite his consciousness of politics, feel for this young prostitute. In Bangkok, beauty is like hydroelectric power. It's for sale and it's for consumption. So this girl was essentially orphaned by global development, and now she herself is for sale. And it's all described very beautifully. You notice that in the poem, the dams are beautifully tooled, and that water is shimmering silver, and the girl's cheekbones are described, and her lovely skin. And it's interesting that Haas chose to go this route without ending the poem in some sort of explicit condemnation of this process of big energy. But he doesn't really need to end the poem in a condemnation, because by beginning with Pound's idea that beauty is economics, Haas can make a poem that's scary without the need for any sort of direct authorial comment.
Okay, we're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, I want to talk with you about the difference that poetry can make. Welcome back. This is Paul Rippey, and I'm here with Jay Thompson. Jay, you once told me something that Robert Haas said about the impact of poetry. Would you share that with our listeners?
Haas does believe that poems do have an impact, and one of his thoughts is that a poem's impact might pass through many iterations before it leads to change, but that the change might be an enormous one once it happens. His pet example is that at the turn of the 19th century, Wordsworth read German naturalists and philosophers, and then he wrote his own lyrical ballads, which described in great naturalistic lyrical detail the English countryside. Next, Thoreau read Wordsworth and started taking his own walks in the woods, and that led to Walden. Next, John Muir read Thoreau as he decided to travel from Scotland to visit the American wilderness. And finally, Theodore Roosevelt read John Muir, which contributed in part to Roosevelt's own decision to create Yosemite, Yellowstone, and all the other natural parks. So it might have taken 100 years, and Wordsworth certainly never lived to see it, but there is a ripple that connects Wordsworth to Yellowstone, which is kind of a beautiful thought.
No, it really is. I love that. I was out in Yosemite a few months ago and looking at pictures of Teddy Roosevelt and John Muir together. And I invite the listeners of this podcast to get a copy of that poem, which is called, again, it's called Ezra Pound's Proposition by Robert Haas. And it's easy to find on the internet. You can just Google it or Bing it. And if you take that poem and you post it in your offices, or you take this podcast and you share that with your friends, then maybe this poem will eventually have the same impact on decentralizing energy generation in the developing world that Thoreau had on protecting public lands in the U.S. Jay, look, I see we have a few minutes before they kick me out of the studio, and I suspect I'm not the only one here who has to hear a poem more than once before I really understand it. Would you be willing to read us that poem once again?
Sure, Paul, my pleasure. Okay, here goes. By Robert Haas, Ezra Pound's Proposition. Beauty is sexual, and sexuality is the fertility of the earth, and the fertility of the earth is economics. Though he has no recommendation for poets on the subject of finance, I thought of him in the thick heat of the Bangkok night. Not more than 14, she saunters up to you outside the Shangri-La Hotel and says in plausible English, "How about a party, big guy?" Here is more or less how it works. The World Bank arranges the credit, and the dam floods 300 villages, and the villagers find their way to the city where their daughters melt into the teeming streets. And the dam's great turbines, beautifully tooled in Lund or Dresden or Detroit, financed by Lazare Frères in Paris or the Morgan Bank in New York, enabled by judicious gifts from Bechtel of San Francisco or Halliburton of Houston to the local political elite, spun by the force of rushing water, have become hives of shimmering silver. And downriver, they throw that bluish throb of light across her cheekbones and her lovely skin.
Jay Thompson, thank you so much for being on the show, and good luck in your career. Jay's excellent blog can be found at kenyonreview.org/blog. Thanks to Sayer and Kelia for the music at the break. This is Paul Rippey saying goodbye. Look for another podcast soon, and in the meantime, may all of your energy be decentralized.
The Energy Links podcast is brought to you by the Academy for Educational Development Field Project, www.fieldsupportlowa.org/energylinks, and the Center for Financial Inclusion at Action International, www.action.org/center. With the generous assistance of the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, and the Wallace Global Foundation. Of course, the views expressed are not necessarily those of the sponsors. Your comments and questions are welcome. Please send them to energylinks2009@gmail.com.